On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Dearly beloved, from WBUR Boston, I'm John Hockenberry, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. You know, going to the chapel these days costs twice as much as it did in 1990, about $27,000. And that's just for a modest affair, according to wedding planners. With celebrities like Melania Trump and Christina Aguilera and the newly rich in China and India setting the bar, young couples are breaking the bank to keep up. Spending whose money? Well, here in the movie Father of the Bride, Steve Martin plays a father coming to grips with what it takes to tie the knot.
What is he doing?
We need more amps to light the house and the tent. It's cheaper than bringing in a new line.
In terms of the florals out front, we're going to color coordinate with the swans, right?
Swans?
Oh, I think it'd be wonderful.
Perfect.
We're having swans?
Oh, sure. Frank thought it would be great to have swans waddling around the tulip border. You know, as the guest center, it would be really
Nina, we don't have a tulip border.
You will.
This hour on Point, yes, we're having swans. Not just weddings, super-sized weddings and the cost of getting married. Joining me now from New York is Elizabeth Jenkins, assistant editor at InStyle Weddings magazine, one of, I should say, the heaviest magazines to actually pick up in world history. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. How are you doing?
Great. Where do I begin? I mean, some of the weddings that you cover are so full of spectacle that it's almost beyond belief. I mean, we're not just talking rings and, you know, fabulous catering. We're talking, you know, fleets of aircraft.
That's absolutely the case, and it's especially true with destination weddings where they'll send not only the cake itself but the cake makers down to Turks and Caicos from Los Angeles to create the dream cake for them.
And, you know, what do you think is driving this? I mean, certainly, you know, there's a lot of celebrity weddings, and I want to hear about, you know, these enormous affairs that you've covered. But, you know, who's trying to out-top whom here?
I think what's happening is the celebrities are sort of setting the bar, and because of the incredible access that the average person has to the celebrities' lives these days, thanks to the weekly magazines and People.com, and you can constantly see within 24 hours of these lavish celebrations exactly what these people who you watch on TV or whose albums you buy are doing. And so as a result, I think brides are inspired by it. And, you know, everyone wants to do something that's different than what their friend did. And that's, I just interviewed Mindy Weiss, who is celebrity wedding planner based in Beverly Hills last week, and she was saying that that's what every client comes to her wanting. They want to do something that will surprise their guests, that won't make it seem like every other wedding they've been to in the last year.
All right. Well, what is something that qualifies as a memorable, not old hat kind of destination wedding in the scale that you're talking about?
Well, I think that it starts with having different things throughout the night that aren't expected. Everyone expects the bouquet toss, the cake cutting, the first dance, but one thing that's really popular is to have candy bars, which are basically set up on tables in big glass apothecary jars or vases. You know, they'll do tons of bulk candy, and it's kind of just an extra thing that you can do for actually really not that much money. If you go onto a website like groovycandies.com, you can buy that candy that your parents ate and, you know, super cheap, like bazooka gum and stuff like that, and have little favor bags. And that's something that a lot of people are doing, and some people are doing it with cookies and having a whole dessert fleet. So even after you've just had this incredibly decadent, rich chocolate cake, you know, an hour later when you're still going strong on the dance floor, then you can have a second dessert.
Right. Steer clear of the Sambuca there on that one, I'd say.
Exactly.
Star Jones has a private rehearsal dinner catered by P. Diddy's mom. Whoa.
Yes. Star Jones definitely had one of the more elaborate weddings in the last couple of years. I'd say that she and Donald and Melania Trump were probably the two most elaborate that have taken place in the last couple of years.
And hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? I mean,
hundreds of thousands, yes. I mean, for Donald Trump's wedding alone, which took place at his estate, Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, he had 420 guests, and he hired New York City chef Jean-Georges to bring four chefs down along with him to Palm Beach. And it said in our research when we wrote a cover story on Melania that they brought in $18,000 of beluga caviar.
You know, it's so hard to get a chef in Palm Beach, I've noticed, you know?
Absolutely. You know, you can't have just who's there. And with that, I mean, they hired New York City wedding planner Preston Bailey, who's another extremely popular choice with celebrities and normal brides, too. But he's known for his over-the-top floral creations. And for their wedding, he used more than 10,000 white flowers. Melania had told him that she wanted just all white, elegant, and that's what they did. And, you know, it's just kind of an unbelievable spectacle. And I think when readers see those pictures in magazines, obviously they're not going to do something on that scale. But if anything, they might say, oh, there's, you know, she did mainly orchids or she did mainly hydrangea. I really like that flower. I should incorporate that somehow.
What about the Rivers Endicott wedding in 1998 where there were 100 white birch trees in the aisle of the church?
I know. That definitely was a legendary one as well.
And I mean, I can just imagine a bride going, you know, I want redwoods.
Right.
Forget the birch.
Yes. Please go to California and get those for me.
That's amazing. So do you find that when Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston do fireworks at their wedding, that then people are like coming in to order fireworks for their weddings?
It's funny that you say that because we actually just wrote about sparklers. And sparklers have been a really popular trend. I mean, fireworks we've also written about, and NASCAR driver Jimmy Johnson did that when he got married in St. Bart's last year, and Jason Priestley from Beverly Hills 90210 did that when he was married in the Bahamas, and it's definitely a popular choice, but sparklers are kind of a less expensive way to go. You still kind of have the effect of the bright light and all of that, but what we found when researching it was that you have to check with your local fire laws because
right.
In New York City, for example, they're illegal. But a company that we work with a lot, sparklers online, they sell tons of them, and you can get them 10 inches or 36 inches. And they're great for beach weddings, you know, when you have a lot of space and you have kids who are closely monitored by their parents and, you know, want to play around. But
right. It's always a downer at the wedding when a kid catches on fire from some fireworks.
Well, and those bridesmaids' dresses, I think, are highly flammable.
There you go. Well, Elizabeth, thank you very much. It sounds like you've got some serious junkets ahead in your job at InStyle Weddings Magazine.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Joining me now from New York is Kami Wyckoff, freelance writer and author of I Do and I Don't: Walking Down the Aisle Without Losing Your Mind. She serves on the board of Stanford University's Institute for Research on Women and Gender. Welcome to the program, Kami.
Thank you, John.
You know, your book is fascinating because it constitutes kind of an ethnographic study of these bizarre, out-of-control weddings and is a personal memoir. I mean, what does this kind of wedding process do to your mind?
Well, it can make you lose your mind, as I suggest in the subtitle of my book. I think one of the things listening to the InStyle magazine celebrity wedding thing that made me think about is I didn't interview celebrities. I looked at celebrity weddings, but I was interviewing women like myself, regular people, quote unquote, who, as she said, do get caught up in all of this. And I think what's changed is that there has been a long tradition of royalty and celebrities having very lavish, elaborate weddings. What's happened over the last 10 or 15 years is people, sort of regular people, are trying harder and harder to do that themselves.
And why do you think? Is it because people love marriage and weddings, or that maybe they're a little insecure and the relationship maybe needs a little help, so let's get some balloons, you know, like hot air balloons?
Right. Well, I think actually some of it does reflect a growing anxiety about marriage. You know, there's a feeling that there's a lot of pressure from the wedding industry to sort of say, if your marriage matters to you, then you are not going to skimp, quote unquote, on your wedding, and that this is a way of showing your commitment and how much you care. And that message is very insidious, and it's easy to kind of get that in your head and feel guilty if you don't go that extra mile or spend that extra $100 or $1,000.
And did someone say that to you, that you chose one thing and, you know, the salesperson said, well, I mean, I guess if you're sort of casually getting married, that might be a fine dress, but this $5,000 dress is really
right.
Where you want to go.
Well, some people said that they felt a lot of pressure to show what it was worth to them. that if you cared about your marriage, that you would show what it was worth to you. And also, a lot of women talked to me about what they called the wedding tax. This is something that, you know, when you call a venue and you say you want to have an event there, if you use the word birthday, you're going to get a different price than if you say wedding. So there's a lot of, you know, very deliberate kind of taking advantage of couples who are at this point in their lives. And yes, all those insecurities that they might feel about not only showing that they care about their wedding, but also competing with their friends or feeling, you know, another bride said to me, weddings are now a competitive sport. And I did feel that, you know, it was very hard to kind of resist that as wedding planners and caterers and florists are showing you again and again what other people are doing. Well, and saying, you know, you can do the same.
The scale is so vast. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people. I remember when my wife and I got married 11 years ago, we went into a place where we were registered and we were telling them, you know, what our ceremony was about. And she said, how many people? And we said, well, about 200 people. And she looked at me and she said, well, that's a nice-sized wedding, except in Texas. You know, and I said, what are you talking about? You went in Texas, you know, there's 400 people. That's a small wedding. And now it's gone up from there.
Yeah. The South has a tradition of that. I grew up in Texas, actually, but chose not to get married there. Yeah, things have just grown a lot.
There's wedding planning and there's wedding therapy. And sometimes there's both. Here's Jennifer Lopez calming an anxious bride in the movie The Wedding Planner.
You are the luckiest girl in the world. When I did Whitney Houston's wedding, she was even more nervous than you. And you look 10 times better than she did.
No, I don't. This isn't going to work. I'm fat, and I'm going to marry the wrong guy.
Look at me. You are exquisite. You're timeless. You're the envy of your future sister-in-law, Janice, whom I overheard say at the last gown fitting, look at those thighs. I'd kill for Tracy's thighs.
Yes, it's all about thighs. Let me read something, Kami, from your book about wedding planners that you wrote. To me, you write, a wedding consultant was a life-saving flotation device to wear around my waist as I bobbed up and down in the vast, unfriendly foreign ocean of corsages, dinner plates, space heaters, seating assignments, and save-the-date letters that, according to the magazines, I was about to be tossed into. A wedding consultant also seemed like a nanny. Did you find one like that?
Well, not really. I think just as well as there's the fantasy of the perfect nanny who will sort of make your life work and take over all those duties that you're not sure how to carry out yourself. You know, the fantasy of the perfect wedding planner is similar. J-Lo did not fill in for my wedding and tell me how exquisite my thighs were, unfortunately.
Well, we have a fantasy wedding planner with us from Greenwich, Connecticut. Real-life wedding planner Elizabeth Securo. She's creative director of the event planning firm Dolce Parties. She's helped couples plan modest weddings as well as million-dollar extravaganzas. Thanks for joining us, Liz.
Hi, John. Hi, Kami.
So I gather at Dolce Parties, they may be sweet, but getting there is anything but, right?
Yeah, there's a little of the bittersweet. I mean, it is a journey. And by the way, Kami, so many of my brides read your book, and it's fantastic. And I think that what we're saying is that people are so much focused on the day and not the marriage, and it is our job to kind of swoop in there. And 50% of it is psychology, and 50% of it is, you know, that whole J-Lo ridiculousness, although there's some truth in that movie. There really is.
Well, for both of you, as the costs go up and the destination spectacle gets more extravagant, is therapy less in order or more in order? And Liz, why don't you begin, and then I'll get Kami's comments. And we have a million calls here.
I think it's more in order, certainly. I think if somebody is that obsessed with detail, first of all, if you have a wedding planner, let them obsess. If I have a bride who's really micromanaging the whole process and spending more and more money, you know, it's like throwing more money at the problem. And sometimes more is just more. And you can almost predict the success or failure rate of marriages based on not how much they're spending, but just the way they're interacting with each other or not. I mean, you can be engaged for a year and really not speak about anything but the wedding. And we really try and caution against that, because, and we try and get our couples to actually know one another. And be, I think part of the luxury of having a planner is so that you can enjoy this time and realize why you're marrying somebody.
Now, you run into some bad ideas in your business, Liz.
Could you
just please tell me, just for me, the butterfly story?
Oh, my gosh. It's just, you know, it's terrible. And it's one of those things where wedding planners should never impose their own style or ideas. So, to be brief, if we have somebody who insists on something and it's their lifelong dream, fine. We're going to go with it. We're going to make it happen. We had some bride. We had a bride who was really obsessed with the whole idea of butterflies, and I understood why, and there was, you know, it was an organic thought, and I get that. And so she wanted to release butterflies outside the ceremony, which was nowhere really near the tent.
So a nice little pattern on a napkin wasn't going to work for her.
Yeah, exactly.
She needed real butterflies.
I could have, like, had a butterfly sewn into her bouquet, but no. We had to have live, like, thousands of live butterflies. And they had to be a certain color. I'm not kidding you.
Well, that must have been lovely.
Oh, it was lovely. And so these poor creatures, when they were released, they, you know, it was a cool day, and the tent had all these massive lighting installations going on, and butterflies are drawn to heat and light. So what did they do? They flew into the tent and went up onto the rafters and got all crispy and fell. I mean, they died. They literally, there was smoke. They were dropping into people's hair and into people's gowns. It was just, it was one of those, it was like a nightmare moment. I mean, could I have prevented it? Most likely. But it just, you know, you don't think of these things. Perhaps the butterfly people should have alerted me, and I won't let you know who they were.
No. Please don't. We won't want to traumatize them. Kami, anything familiar there?
Well, I think that Liz makes a good point that wedding planners actually can be wonderful to help you with the logistics of planning. And having somebody do that can also, you know, help you understand that some of the things that you're feeling when you go through this process are not about stress about the florist and the caterer and everything else that you're kind of transferring all of those feelings to, but that actually you need to slow down and stop and think about what you're doing. And that, particularly for women, that there's this moment when you're about to become a bride and a wife where there are a lot of much deeper things going on having to do with an identity crisis of sort of going from your 20-something independent career woman self to becoming a wife, things in your relationship that you need to be paying attention to. And a lot of this stuff, it's a vicious cycle. I think sometimes ignoring those issues causes you to spend even more on trying to have the perfect wedding and frying butterflies to a crisp in your moment of crisis and angst. What I tried to do with the book, and as I was interviewing all these women, was to get them to think about some of these deeper issues that you can sort of bury under a pile of save-the-date cards.
Yes, butterflies sacrificed on the altar of human matrimonial hubris.
Right.
Nita is calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Nita, you're on the air.
Hi there. As I'm listening to these stories, I'm sort of chuckling. I've been a bridesmaid 3 times now. And the first wedding I experienced the decadence, in my opinion, greatly when the bride decided, the wedding was at a very nice, very beautiful hotel, 250 guests in downtown Boston, and she decided that she wanted to have strawberries flown in from California, but the strawberries were going to be decorated as bride and groom. And I can just tell you, you know, I'm getting the shivers just remembering the anxiety of making sure that nothing melted, that they were perfect. We had to go through and check them. We had to tie them up in ribbons and to ensure that every guest had one. And
did they actually look like the bride and groom?
Yes, they did.
So the bride and,
oh, that's too bad for the bride and groom.
They looked like strawberries?
No, they had their outfits, the whole outfit, you know, her dress. Her dress, a veil, you know, his hat.
Oh, that's so sad.
Cummerbund. Anyway, you know, obviously. So I just had to share this story because it just came into my mind right away when I was laughing about hearing, you know, the lengths that people will go to. It's just, it never ceases to amaze.
Oh, it's great. Thank you for calling, Nita. You know, the whole ceremony of the pre-wedding has expanded significantly, Kami and Liz. I mean, the bachelorette parties, the rehearsal dinners, and the bachelor parties. What's going on there, you guys?
You know, I and I'm sure Cammie can speak to this point, but there are sometimes when I'm almost befuddled at how many parties guests must attend to celebrate one bride and one groom. And, you know, there's like an engagement party, maybe or maybe not, but then I'm starting to see like other things, like an engagement dinner that's right before the wedding. Well, what is that? I've been a wedding planner for 15 years and I don't even know what that means. And then you have a shower for friends and a shower for family and a shower where the town you grew up and a shower from, you know, where you live now.
And male strippers.
You know, I don't even go there. Yeah,
female
strippers. It's so cheesy. And you, just this rash of pre-wedding parties, and guests are so befuddled because they're like, am I supposed to bring a gift to everything? I mean, I'm in this now for like $5,000, and I haven't even bought the plane ticket to go to the wedding. I mean, Cammie, I'm sure you can speak to that. It's just, you know, it's insane. It's insane.
Well, I mean, one thing that sort of elephant in the room here is that the wedding industry, I actually had to revise this number between writing the book and the copy editing process. It's become a $125 billion a year business.
Absolutely.
And it's huge. And some of this is being driven by, it's funny that you mentioned that some of these things, they're set up as they're a tradition. So, you know, it's traditional to have an engagement dinner before the wedding when actually no one's ever heard of it.
Right.
So some of this is being driven by these kind of lists of things to do. If you open up Martha Stewart Weddings and most of these wedding magazines, you'll find very conveniently, I felt like it was a syllabus of, you know, 200 items that were now on my list of things to do as a bride. And this has resulted also, engagements last much longer than they used to. The average couple is now engaged for 17 months. And that's a very long time to be obsessing about your wedding and feeling like this should be the most important thing in your life. And so, you know, I guess you need things to do during that whole long period of time.
John is calling from Washington, D.C. John, you're on the air.
Yes, I had a question on, Is it incumbent upon the guests at a wedding to bring better prizes or better gifts if it's a more elaborate wedding? And is there any ethnic groups that are more elaborate than others?
You know, that's a really good question, John. I mean, I think that most guests don't really know if the wedding... Well, it's actually reflected usually in the invitation. You can sort of tell. No, I think not. I think that you should choose a gift that's appropriate to who they are and their relationship to you.
So if you're flying in a G4 to the wedding,
exactly,
and you have as a gift the Trivial Pursuit game, you're probably feeling a little guilty, right?
Probably. Yeah. Although,
but you may have, well, with some of these elaborate weddings too, you may have already been hit up for gifts three or four times.
Cammie's right.
Because there will have been multiple showers, engagement parties where gifts are expected. So that may not even be the first gift that you're giving to this couple.
And I think in speaking to John's question about are there certain ethnicities, I think traditionally, and I hate to use that word, but I think historically, rather, there was. But I think that it's like a level playing field now. I think everybody's grabbing for the brass ring, and it's terrible. I think that appropriateness and graciousness is always going to win out in the end. So, but I think, I mean, I hear stories every day from all over the country where people, it's mind-boggling, you know, what, and guests do feel uncomfortable. You want to know what to bring. And I say, you know, if they're registered, then, you know, go with their registry and see what it is that they really want. And
well, speaking of that, quickly tell the story of the couple that you fired because of their peculiar kind of almost product placement approach to wedding gifts.
Seriously, I've never fired a client. Until these people, and you know, I'm sure they know who they are, but it's interesting because here we were, they were very tasteful, we're going along through the process, she had a really well-edited sense of style, and they had really lovely families. I mean, there were no, you know, we interview our clients really extensively as they interview us, and there were no red alerts or roadblocks.
And then,
the groom was an architect, and then, you know, sometimes we don't get involved in the registry. I got a copy of their quote-unquote something registry that they had sent out after the invitations, and it was literally a scroll of blueprints. And you could, if you're a guest, it basically said, "Help us buy our dream house. Help us buy our country home." And I was like, oh, my God, you could buy a doorknob or a window sash or crown molding in the library. I was like,
or a toilet.
Oh, my God, exactly. And I was at that point, I realized, you know what? Not so much. Really not happening for
That's
us.
Too much.
And you know, we let them go.
That is crazy.
I think,
Peter, hold on one second, Kami. Let me talk, get Peter on the line here, because he's got a slightly different experience. Peter from Providence, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks a lot. I just wanted to say that my wedding 7 years ago cost about $600 altogether.
Well, what does that say about how you think about your wife, pal?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
It says that her being married to her was more important than just an afternoon in the park.
See?
You know,
there you go.
She also didn't want to have a big wedding, and that's why I knew she was the right one, you know.
That is great.
Yeah. A few years later, I was a best man at a wedding, and it cost me more than my entire wedding did.
Well, the guests these days are being asked to do a tremendous amount. I mean, you can actually spend a lot of money. And my poor sister goes to something like 10 weddings a year.
Oh.
And she ends up losing her vacation days, her frequent flyer miles, her shirt.
That's an interesting point, Kami, because every once in a while there are couples who say, oh, wouldn't it be great to get married over Memorial Day weekend or Columbus Day weekend or New Year's Eve? No, the answer is no. That's the ultimate selfishness.
Yeah, people invited me to a wedding on New Year's Day, and I just couldn't believe it, and they wouldn't change.
And also this idea, I read there was a piece in USA Today, sort of a personal essay by a woman who had a destination wedding. And her contention was that it was so much more simple and it was cheaper and it was this beautiful thing. And I thought, I don't know if that was cheaper for your guests.
Where did she have it? At like Leavenworth Prison or something?
Some very remote village in Mexico. People would have had to have taken 4 or 5 days to get there. They have to fly. They have to make arrangements. So, you know, this notion that doing that is actually a more simple solution, I think, is a little bit suspect.
As we've heard, the smallest wedding detail can send people to the breaking point. Take the cake, literally. Steve Martin meets Cakezilla in Father of the Bride. Martin Short is playing the wedding planner.
Do you like it, Dad?
Well, what is that? Is that dollars? $1,200?
Beloved Master Banks, this is a very reasonable price for a cake of this magnitude.
A cake, Franck, is made of flour and water. My first car didn't cost $1,200.
Welcome to the 90s, Mr. Banks.
And that was just the 90s. Joining me now from Boston is Jill Plutnicki. She is getting married September 29th, and congratulations. And she has her wedding shower this weekend, and she spent more than a year planning her 130-person wedding. Jill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John.
Jill, is today a good day?
Sure.
Yep. And how would you rate the ratio of good days versus bad days in your many months of planning this?
You know, today's actually a down day because I did so much yesterday that I just need to step away from it today.
Well, go through your to-do list. I mean, you're involved in a lot of the details of the wedding. Describe, you know, how are the flowers coming?
The flowers are actually pretty much done. I have a florist who has been great. But you can't firm up really all of your floral until you have your guest list, all your invitations back. So until you get that, you can't confirm with your florist. So, you know, it's one of these things I think I thought, okay, well, I pick my flowers and I'm done. No, not so much. You still have about 2 or 3 other times that you need to talk to this person to figure out how many tables you're going to have and if you want flowers outside, depending on the day we're getting married outside. So what do the flowers look like in bloom, you know, the week before? Do they need to bring more of them in? And, of course, at an extra charge. But
yeah, how is the cost overrun situation at this point?
You know, I originally, John, set for a very small, simple, easy wedding. I've been in 9, so I thought, you know, I can do this, no problem. I've probably gone double what I originally intended to spend.
Ouch.
And that's being really cost conscious.
Now, your husband-to-be, how's he taking all of this? Is he even aware of any of the details?
You know, I'm very, very fortunate. My dear fiancé has been very involved in the decisions that he needs to be. So flowers, he doesn't so much necessarily care about, but the cake, the flavor of the cake was important to him. So he picked that. And kind of the major, where it was, what day it was, he was involved in those decisions.
And he's picking the, like, Swiss Army knife party favors for all the guys.
He was like, do we even need party favors? Do you know, why do I need to do that? So he's been great. I don't think he understands. I don't think anyone not directly involved in calling all the vendors and doing all that has any idea all the little things that go into it.
Well, you're counting down to September 29th. Kami and Liz, any advice for Jill?
Well, I would just like to say something. I'm just glad that we have Jill here because I think talking about all of the most extreme stories, which you can laugh about and are fascinating in this kind of car wreck way, it really distracts from how much women who are not stupid, as the earlier caller suggested, but who are actually intelligent, well-intentioned people who are just trying to get through this process also find themselves double over budget and find themselves, particularly the women, and this is a very important point, sort of taking on a second job.
Yeah.
A lot of times women are working full time, just as their husbands-to-be are working full time, and they find themselves doing sort of the first shift of the double shift, where this kind of thing falls under their purview, and it's their job, so to speak.
You have a job, right, Jill?
Correct.
How's that going?
It's going well. I actually, we get up really, really early, so that helps me out. You know, we're up at 4:30 in the morning, so I know, it's a little insane. But because of that, and because my job, I'm in sales in Boston, so I'm out and about all day. So I can kind of get things done at night and early in the morning.
And thank God for cell phones, right?
I know.
Yeah, you could never do this kind of thing. Liz, she suggested earlier that she's having an outdoor wedding. Any advice for Jill?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, thank you, Jill, for calling. I mean, Jill is one of the ones who's doing it right. I mean, as our last caller suggested, we're not condoning this at all. And I think that there is a balance. And my advice to Jill, really, in these following weeks is, you know, go out on a date with your fiancé to dinner at least once a week where you do not speak about the wedding. And to also, you know, things about wellness, you know, eating well and exercising. And really, you know, because I think that what people find is that there is this letdown afterwards, and you want to avoid that. And as far as the outdoor thing, obviously there's got to be a backup rain plan. and whatever people tell you, whatever vendors tell you, about Wednesday of that week, if you need a tent, that's when it would need to be installed. So I would just, and also something very simple, rent umbrellas. They have huge white or whatever color you need golf umbrellas at any great party rental place in the area. And I know some sources in your area as well. So,
all right, well, that's
really
fantastic advice. That is great, great advice. Well, good luck, Jill.
Thank you very much.
We wish you well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And out there listening to the program, you're all invited to Jill's wedding on September 29th. Yes, so just show
up. Her budget just quintupled.
Yeah, really. Gosh.
We better call your floral designer the pro.
Yeah. I know.
Thanks for being with us, and good luck. We're going to talk to Robert, who's calling from Lansing, Michigan. Robert, you're on the air.
Oh, mainly I just wanted to pass on a phrase I heard on Car Talk, those great marital experts.
We've heard of them.
used the term the marital industrial complex that I found very humorous because I'm a part of it. And I felt both, humor and discomfort when I heard that term because I'm a musician who does lots of weddings, and I feel both. Oh, at times I am very disturbed by the whole thing, and actually I kind of agreed with the lady a moment ago that how she felt negatively about the process.
Well, what was the most extravagant, insane wedding that you ever performed at?
Oh, well, in this venue,
Oh, we lost Robert. Paul, you're calling.
He's speechless.
Paul is, and it was at an elaborate venue. Paul from Mystic, Connecticut, you're on the air.
Howdy, how are you?
Just great.
Well, mine's a two-part story. The first part took place a bunch of years ago. And when I got married, it was quite elaborate for the day, and we threw all sorts of ceremony at it. We added everything that sounded really nifty, and we thought people would say, hey, that's really neat. You know, we haven't seen that before, and I still have people coming up to me, well, a few years ago at least, saying to me, gee, that was a really nice wedding.
What kind of stuff? What kind of stuff?
Well, it's too bad you're divorced.
Right. Well, I could sort of sense that coming, but what sort of stuff did you do at the wedding that was memorable?
Full due respect, that really wasn't my point. It was that the ceremony part, I can't remember. The point was quite ceremonial, and it really wasn't for us. It was an external thing. It was so that we could put on a show.
Right.
Now the second wedding, when I discovered the woman I really needed to be with, right? Mm-hmm. When we decided we're going to get married, it was a celebration from the very first second. Now it was a question of how much fun could we have and how many people could we involve. The bottom line is, I think we spent about maybe $5,600, $6,000 tops. We had our wedding at a yacht club that was a real cheap donation by some good friends of ours. We had a band play. We kind of knew the people, through third parties, and they're very good blues musicians. We had about a little shy of 400 people at our wedding, and we had tents for rain, contingency plans and so on. We told people absolutely no gifts. Do not show up with anything other than food. And a woman, a good friend of ours, had a big truck with refrigeration and heating, and just shoved the food in there on the way into the church.
So how many years did this marriage last before you got divorced?
Well, I tell you what, death before divorce this time, my friend.
All right.
This woman
good
is
for
a
you.
Pleasure.
Good for you.
I would be, I'd have to be run over, I'd have to be shot for being that stupid to I've never had one argument with this woman.
All right, Paul, well, we're happy for you.
Good for you.
It's amazing.
Yeah, well, interesting, it's on these second marriages, how do they differ, Elizabeth, from the first marriages that, tend to try to break the bank?
Well, I mean, I think it works both ways. First marriages sometimes can be very simple and very intimate and can just involve two people, and we've done those. But generally speaking, yes, I think second marriages, and I myself am married to my second husband, and I think it's hard. If you're talking to a wedding planner who's never been married, then that's usually not a good idea. You need to know, that the person you're dealing with has walked the aisle herself or himself. I think that second weddings tend to be much more relationship-driven and relationship-focused, and that's one challenge that we always have. So many people in the first wedding are not focused on the ceremony, which I think is really important. It's like, have you done premarital counseling? Have you gone to see? I don't care if it's a Unitarian minister, a justice of the peace, or a rabbi. A lot of people are missing that boat, and they sort of gloss over, oh, the ceremony, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's absolutely not true, and I think that, and while certainly do I profit from this industry, yes, but there are people that we won't take simply because, you know what, it's our job to get them to the altar, but it's their job to be engaged and to reflect on why they're marrying this person.
That's
interesting.
That's
a dirty secret that no one's looking at.
Kamie, when you think back on your wedding, what detail turned out to be the most memorable and maybe the most important to your subsequent relationship? And was that a surprise?
Well, I think Liz is absolutely right that what ended up being the most important was that my husband and I wrote our own vows, and going through that process of doing that and thinking about it and then surprising each other with what we had to say that day and, crying. And, that was the most meaningful thing, but it wasn't a surprise. We did sort of realize that was the heart of the matter. But when you talk about second marriages, in my book, at the end of each chapter, I talk about the diamond ring. I talk about showers, bachelorette parties, sort of each stage of wedding. And I imagine how I would have done it differently. And I have found that kind of after having gone through it, unfortunately, I'm much more able to be mindful and thoughtful about what all of those rituals mean and to think about how important actually the way you get married is. In all this, there's this feeling that people are obsessing over it too much. My thought is they're obsessing over the wrong things. And they're actually missing a huge opportunity to think about very important things that are worth obsessing about. Who are you? What is your marriage going to be like?
And you can get those wedding vows from weddingvows.com for only about $1,000 a line. Yeah. So Carrie is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Carrie, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just got married a week and a half ago.
Congratulations.
Wow. Oh, thanks. I just wanted to make two quick comments. One is I consider myself to be a feminist for the most part, and I found myself to be surprised at how easy it was to get caught up in all the pressure just because it's coming from every direction. I mean, not only all the vendors, but you have your family and your friends, and it just feels like it's the first chance to show yourselves as a couple to everyone, and you have to worry about what all these different opinions bring to your event, which
That's
can
exactly
be really
right.
conflicting at a lot of times. And also, the other thing is, I don't know if anyone's mentioned the knot yet, but that is one website that is completely out of control, in my opinion, and I just found it really depressing. I did look at it because they had some really helpful tools like checklists for what you should be doing each month, but they also had all these chat boards, and people had bios, and they took pictures of every single element, their save the date cards, their bouquets, all their different hairstyles they were considering. And
this is the knot.com?
Yeah. And people create logos.
They just had an IPO last week. Huge dollars. Look it up on financial news boards. And they also bought the Wedding Channel. Oh, yeah. Big money.
The marital industrial complex marching forward.
But I'm glad feminism has been raised, because that's also something that comes into this. And women really struggle to kind of play. It's the whole thing of women supposed to be it all, do it all, have it all. You're supposed to somehow be your feminist, independent woman self, and at the same time spend a third of your wedding budget, which is what the average couple does, on your appearance, which is, you know, not necessarily the most feminist thing I can think of.
Yeah, indeed.
I do think you raise a very good point, because I've seen these just really strong, wonderfully intelligent, you know, feminist women just reduced to blithering idiots just because of an industry which I am.
That was me.
And it's true. And I think if you remain true to yourself, there's really no way to avoid those pressures. But I think it's great that you called in and sort of explained that whole process and that feeling and that journey. Like, well, what am I doing? You know, you start to question who you are. And that, to me, is another dirty secret about getting married. It shouldn't be about that.
Liz, what's the best advice you ever gave a couple that they took?
The best advice I ever gave a couple that they took, you know, and this is the 50% psychologist part of who we are and what we do, is, you know what, is really to go out regularly to make time for one another. And I think if you have a planner, you sort of can, but not everybody in the world, you know, not everyone can have one. But to really, really, really think about why you're getting married, and in practicality, to indeed sit down with whether it's an attorney or a spiritual advisor, or to really think about why you're getting married. And when people take me up on that, suddenly you see it's like a weight is lifted off of them. You know, it's suddenly it's not about flowers and favors and the dress and how do I look and what do my thighs look like. It's about, oh my gosh, I'm marrying the greatest person on earth. And I think it's very important that people really do have some form of premarital advice.
Esta from Reston, Virginia, you're on the air. Esta.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I think this is an absolutely pathetic topic to have on your program. It makes it sound as though all the women in America are absolutely stupid and no man would marry them unless they spend untold amounts of money on their wedding. I strongly resent that.
Well, that's why we are thrilled that you called.
Good. Okay. My main question is, has any one of these wonderful people you're interviewing done any research to find out how many of these hideously expensive weddings end up in divorce before the weddings are paid for? I'd also like to make one suggestion. If you want to show that you are wealthy and you are generous and you are wonderful, why not adopt a child overseas through an organization like Compassion? And no, I am not a member of the Compassion business, but I do have children there. Instead of wasting your money like that, let's do something that's helpful to other people. And I hope other people will pick up and agree with me. Thank you.
All right, Esther, thank you. You know, I would have expected that call at 10 after the hour rather than 36 after the hour, but go ahead.
I would like to say one thing. There's a fantastic organization called the I Do Foundation that helps couples actually register for charitable gifts. So that's one thing to think about.
All right. Kami Wyckoff, freelance writer and author of I Do and I Don't, Walking Down the Aisle Without Losing Your Mind. And real-life wedding planner Elizabeth Securo. She's creative director of the event planning firm Dolce Party. I'm John Hockenberry, and this is On Point.